Hey guys, welcome to the Behavior Techs Anonymous podcast. I am your host, Miss Ashley, and I'm a behavior tech. Let's reinforce some of my behaviors. Hello and welcome back to Behavior Techs Anonymous. I am your host, Miss Ashley, and today we are going to be continuing the conversation with somebody that we had on before, and that would be Miss Lexi. Hi, Lexi. Thank you for coming back.
Hey, Miss Ashley. Thanks for having me, honey.
All right. So the last time we had a conversation, we kind of ended it with the conversation of physical prompts and how... gosh, what did you say? That it was soft of ABA, like ABA was getting too soft with it.
Yeah.
Is that like a major reason kind of like why you left ABA?
I mean, yeah, it definitely played a part. But honestly, like, I guess my goal here is not to like bash anybody or anything, but my supervision really wasn't very good.
Okay.
And I guess I struggled a lot with some BCBA's decisions. And really, for the most part, I wasn't heard. So that was a big part of why I left. And, you know, kind of in the clinic setting, I just didn't always have the best experiences. You know, just like there are bad group homeowners and bad counselors. Unfortunately, there's bad BCBAs, and I just had too many run-ins.
Yeah, too many. I understand that. I feel that. Which is like unfortunate because so like I feel like a BCBA, no matter how good a clinical director herself might be or themselves, I only had female clinical directors. I feel like the BCBA really makes or breaks your RBT experience.
Yeah.
I actually had a BCBA who I don't want to say too much. I don't want to feel like, I don't want to call anybody out. Like you said, like, I don't want to like pick on anybody, but right. I just had some really rough BCBAs who it felt like they themselves didn't understand ABA.
Yeah.
Or like didn't care about the experiences of RBT.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
During like, a job interview, I had a BCBA basically tell me, well, actually she like ran it. So she might've been a clinical director. Anyway, she basically told me that like RBTs were like a dime a dozen. And whenever one of hers quit, she had like three more waiting to come in. And I probably said this on this podcast before, because it just like blew my mind, because I was in there like interviewing for an RBT position. And she had just gotten done telling me that they were desperate. So then, like, which one is it? Are you desperate or do you just not care?
Right. Right. I mean, and I guess if she sees RBTs that way, then she's not going to be able to keep one, because she's got that mindset of like, oh, don't we lose one? We just put back on another. And that's a really dangerous mindset to have because, well, they're people. And I guess they deserve to be heard and listened to, and RBTs are the ones that are with the clients the most.
Yeah.
So although I guess a BCBA can sit back and they can read a behavior plan, they can read the data. But I've also had BCBAs that were never RBTs. And that used to strike a real nerve in me.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue. A huge issue, honestly.
Yeah.
Like... I feel like you can tell. You can definitely tell from the ones that were RBTs to the ones that weren't. And that's not to say, like, you don't have to be an RBT to be a good BCBA. But I do think that you have to work harder as a BCBA to try to be good to your RBTs if you don't have that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, if... I just don't know. I don't know where I would be if I didn't have good BCBAs. Like, I feel like I would have just maybe given up altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also kind of feel like, I don't know, being an RBT for too long is going to burn you out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like an RBT is one of those fields that you do for 10 years.
No.
I feel like, you know, people do it for 2 to 5 years and yeah, like they get burnt out. There's really nowhere for them to move up unless they are going to school.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucks too. So, I mean,
it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. Like, because, you know, like you have to remember like all these different like behavioral concepts and the ones that are specifically for this one kid that you're working with.
Right.
And then you just have like all these other like factors like coming down on you. And then like, again, like you said, like there's nowhere to like move up. Like, yeah, like some clinics do have like lead RBT, or I've seen in like some of the Facebook groups are like senior behavior technician, but like, they're just like fancy words to make techs feel good about themselves.
Oh, for sure. It's all wordplay. That's all it is. It's all wordplay.
Like, you know, like I was a lead RBT and then like, I just got more work and then they gave me like a 5-cent raise.
Right.
And they were like, congratulations.
Yeah. You're our lead RBT. Yeah. I don't know, ma'am.
I was okay. And like, it sucked because I was like excited about it. Cause I'm like, oh, I'm doing a good job. But then I was like, I kind of feel like a sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being an RBT is hard, man. It just is. It's hard. You're like the face of the clinic or wherever you're working for. And it's hard and it's draining and they're long sessions. And I mean, well, you work in a school, so you basically have 8-hour sessions with multiple kids.
Yep.
How big is your classroom?
We have 7 kids in the classroom right now with 3 RBTs and 1 BT who is going to school to be a special education teacher.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I have found that the best BCBAs are ones that not only were an RBT, but that should, I don't know, I kind of think that should be a requirement, but were the ones that taught in a school prior to becoming a BCBA.
Yep.
Because not only do they have the behavior training, which obviously is a super important piece, but they have like that, that ability to perceive different kids' styles of learning.
Mm-hmm.
They implement educational base things. It's not just like your typical ABA session. And that I think is really, really important. Like, I think like that experience is going to thrive more in any BCBA. Mm-hmm. Cause you come from multiple perspectives.
Yeah, no, definitely. Actually, so I have like 3 main BCBAs in my life that, have kind of like guided me in like different ways on how to do stuff. And one of them used to be a teacher and, she just like, you could just tell like in the school setting that I had worked with her in that she just kind of like knew like that much more than anybody else. And it was like, she could get both sides. So she could like get, the educators and the admin and the kids and me. And it was just really nice. Like, it was very kind of like eye opening,
mm-hmm.
I guess, to like actually be able to like see the difference, because it's like, we can like talk about it, but to like actually see it and be like validated, like, no, that is correct. That would be the best thing to do. It's just, it's nice.
Yeah. 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 I like that. I think that those BCBAs that have that experience are going to be that much better.
Mm-hmm.
And just, all of those different perspectives that mesh together, it really is like a holistic approach for a kid on the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a one size fits all. You got to know ABA or they won't learn anything. That's untrue. ABA is a really, really, really great foundation, but especially mixed with school educational structured kind of systems.
Yeah. And that's kind of like what I'm doing. I say we, because I'm including everybody else in my little classroom, but that's kind of like, mm-hmm. what the model of this room is like, so we focused on like functional communication first and letting like the kids know that their voice means something, and kind of like built it from there. to include like the academics and like now they're all able to like walk in a line down the hallway together when before that just was never a possibility for them to be able to leave the room safely in a group.
Right. Right. So
it's just,
does your traditional like, okay, how different, if at all, does a classroom setting look than like traditional clinic ABA?
It's pretty different. It is still very structured, but with having to like mesh the education aspect into it, it does like make it vary a bit. So like, for example, if there's a kid and they like really struggle with math, mm-hmm. and they just can't stand it. And they're just like, I need a break. I don't want to do it. I need a break. I don't want to do it. So, and it's hard. It was really hard, but just to like allow them to have a break every time they asked for it, and then bringing that work back. So yeah. It's not as like black and white. Everything's in a box. This is what we do. This is how we do it. It's like everything needs to be like individualized and like catered to.
Right, right, right. Exactly. I mean, and that's how it should be, regardless if, you know, the kids are on the spectrum or not. I mean, just recently, within the past like 4 or 5 years, did they start putting meditation centers in schools?
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how freaking happy that makes me. If I had a meditation room in school, I guarantee you, I would not have gotten in that much trouble. If I had just 10 minutes to be able to think and breathe and calm down, I bet you I would not have had as many behaviors in school as I did. Yeah. And it's very, I guess, kind of similar whether you're on the spectrum or not. I mean, just having that at a school, having that safe space to have mm-hmm. when you need it really does wonders for these kids' mental health. And, you know, I think that that's another reason why I left ABA, is because while I understand that we're not trained to pick up on mental health issues, that's kind of the problem. We're not trained to pick up on mental health issues.
Yeah.
And I think looking back, there was way too much of an emphasis on getting a child to comply mm-hmm. rather than understanding that they might have something deeper going on. Okay. I mean, and you and I ran into a very similar situation when we worked together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of things were unfortunately ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just didn't have the education or the knowledge of a training to pick up on that, which either way, it's not fine. I mean, yeah. I think that ABA RBTs should have some deeper training on mental health and how that forms in kids and what it looks like.
Yeah. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think the 40-hour training isn't enough, and it's also not very comprehensive.
Correct.
Like, yes, they have the comp tests and stuff, but like I can study for a test. Like, that's all like this education system has taught me to do, is study for a test. Right. That doesn't mean I know anything.
Right. Right. Right.
So like, just because, and like, I've seen BCBAs prove me right with this too, is just because you're good at school doesn't mean you're going to be good out in the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
exactly.
The same can be true for RBTs who just need to do the 40-hour training. And that's like, I don't want to say like it should require a degree, but I think it should require something.
I do too. I at least think it should require experience. I do not think, and I never have, and you know, Joy and I talk about this a lot, is if you don't have experience in ABA, you shouldn't be getting hired. No. I mean, if I worked in fast food and bars my whole life, and then I said, I'm going to apply to be a court-appointed guardian, that's crazy. Now I'm making decisions for people that I've never once made in my entire life.
Yeah.
I've never worked with the mentally ill. I've never worked with DD. And somebody's going to give me that kind of power? I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
That's crazy. That would be crazy.
Right?
Yeah, no. And like, even for me, like I worked with like neurotypical kids. Like I have experience with children, but not like any formally that were diagnosed with anything neurodiverse at all. Right. So then like, I felt like I was pulled off the street, basically. Like, I was, like, recommended for the job, but, like, I didn't know anything. And they were just like, yeah, come on in. Good luck. Like, I feel like maybe somebody should have to work as, like, a BT for an X amount of months at least.
Yeah.
To be able to see if they should be, like, registered or not. Like, I don't know. Like, something needs to be different.
Yeah, I agree. You know? I agree. Well, wholeheartedly. I mean, because if, I don't know, I guess it's one thing if you don't have the experience. You go in, but you end up loving it. You end up being really good at it.
Yeah.
Then that's fine. But I guess when you pull somebody off the street who doesn't have any experience and they're not willing or able to be open-minded enough, then, like, that's where you run into some problems. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Therapists might be nervous to do something with a kid or might be scared or might, which, I mean, I guess I understand. It's not your kid. But the whole point of this is increasing, is to decrease anxiety in kids and to increase the way that they behave in a normal functioning society.
Yeah.
So if we're afraid to do something, then, like, sometimes I think that we're condoning, like, kids' behaviors.
Yeah.
Which is always why you should seek supervision, of course, but seeking supervision doesn't always make it better.
It's true. Especially if your supervisor just has, like, a brain full of rocks. Like, I know, like, I've asked, like, some, like, in the past, like, questions, and then they just stare at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being so serious.
I mean, my last BCBA was really good. She's probably the best that I had ever had.
Yeah.
She struggled with, like, reducing behaviors, but she was great because she valued each and every one of us.
Yeah.
I mean, so if we had ideas, she would be more than happy to use them. I mean, and she was passionate. I mean, she would text us. She would call us. Hey, I'm thinking of formulating this kind of plan. Can I get your opinion? What do you think?
Yeah.
And to me, that meant a lot because that is what a community is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she treated you guys like you were people who understood and knew what you were doing. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
It's hard to find.
Yeah, it is hard to find. Yeah. I mean, she was the best and I liked where I worked. But to be honest with you, I mean, the biggest reason is because I was earning a degree in social work. So there's no point to earn a bachelor's in social work and stay in ABA, you know? So, I mean, if I felt that I was going to, like, do that for the rest of my life and be a BCBA, then yeah, for sure. I mean, the place that I was working at, like, they would have paid for me to do it. But, oh God, then having to start school all over again, like, come on, I've already been in school since I was 18. I'm 20 freaking 8. Like, come on.
Same.
Changing my degree. You kidding me?
And so I'm like, I'm just going to keep on trucking. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, and I really loved my old supervisor, my old BCBA. She was really awesome. I think if I wasn't earning a degree in social work, I might've still been with her because she was really great.
Yeah, that's nice. No, I do think the school setting is for me, lots of days off and stuff, but also, like, I got super burnt out in the clinic. I tried really hard not to, but, you know, it just, like, slipped up on me. And I really struggled with that because I'd never, like, dealt with burnout before, but, like, this job, like, took it out of me and it was really hard. It, like, made me feel guilty because like I love working with the children. I loved what we did. I loved everything about it, but, like, I was just, like, so tired. Like, I would remember, like, waking up and having to, like, go to work and then being at work and, like, trying to give it my all. And then I would come home and I would literally just, like, sit there and not do anything until it was time for me to go to bed to wake up and do everything all over again.
Yeah. 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 That's how you know you're burnt out when you're not doing anything to, like, make yourself feel a little better. You're not engaging in hobbies or anything like that. Like, that's how you know you're burnt out. And that's how you know you got to step back. So, I mean, kudos to you too for realizing that.
Yeah. Like, I just felt like a zombie. Like, I felt like I was masking, like, at work.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Like, it was working, I guess, but it wasn't like effective as I could have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
So have you ever had to like, I mean, when you get burnt out, like what do you do? What is your self-care? How does Lexi take care of Lexi?
So I know, like, I've talked to you about this before, but I'm like really, really trying to start my own herbal business. I actually like just finished making my business cards. And I just bought a printing label. I'm doing a holistic vending expo, at the end of April, where I get to go out to Kent and I get to set up a table and I get to try to sell some of my products. So really my self-care is making stuff, like whether it's perfumes, lotions, shampoos, deodorants. Like I have this really cool nifty infusing machine that I use. And if it's not that, it's video games or yoga. Yoga's really good for me, like just the kind of person that I am, because I'm so like fast all the time. I'm always on the go. My brain never slows down. So like flow yoga is really, really good for me because it forces me to slow down. It forces me to be more self-aware. And just yoga in general, I think, has helped me notice my burnout. Because you were talking about noticing it. And like that, to me, that takes strength, or like that takes like major introspection, because I could never notice. I'm like, oh, it's just another day. Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm not stressed out. I'm fine. Yeah. And like, just didn't even realize. And like, how unhealthy is that when somebody else has to tell you, Lexi, like, you're super stressed and you don't even know. So I think like in terms of self-care, yes, yoga has really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And herbs too. I mean, I really just, I've got a love for like botany and flowers and the benefits and stuff like that. So, I mean, and it kind of goes into my like want to be a social worker, I think too, because I'm very much like a holistic kind of like interdisciplinary approach.
You're a very healing person.
Yeah, I am. And I think that there are so many other ways that we can heal ourselves from the ground up and also prevent illnesses if we just take better care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what makes me happy. That's what keeps me going.
That's cute. You're so cute. What's your little herb business called? Like what is it?
It's called Within Spirit Holistics.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm doing for the expo, I'm going to be doing face moisturizers, cough syrups, lotions, and chapsticks.
Okay.
So, and maybe sprays too. I have a budget, so I got to like just make sure I'm not overspending. Like my friends are going to let me borrow tables. My other friend is going to let me borrow a big tent to take down there with me. So I'm excited because like I have like a lot of people's support. There's people who know me, like know that this is something like I've really been trying to get off the ground for a couple years. So when I get paid next, I'm actually going to go ahead and I'm going to purchase my LLC. So I'm really trying to make it like a thing, because I think if I have like a side business, I have something to keep me going. Like, it's going to help me notice my burnout. If I am too stressed out, I can just go back to my roots. And I think like that's what kind of makes me feel sane.
Kind of like ground yourself almost.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I like just lose that sense of grounding in like my day to days. You know what I mean? I have a very, very ridiculously large client caseload. And the majority of them all go into psychosis at the same time. Yeah. So, I mean, it's... It can be stressful. Yeah, it can be super stressful. So, and I mean, I still have to work on weekends. Like if I get a phone call from a hospital, I still got to answer that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I'm never really not working, which I have to be really mindful of, because I got to have like, it's impossible to have work and life boundaries with this job. So I think like having something like an herbal business, or just having whatever, if it's a business or not, like being able to sit back and like make stuff, like make homemade items that are good for you, I think is just brings you back to your roots, you know?
I don't know. That's good. I know for me personally, I tried like a bunch of different things. I actually went to my first like formal like meditation. I thought about you when I was there because they like the singing bowls.
Oh yeah, man.
But awesome. Also, so like I forgot what the singing bowls were called. So when I seen it on like the sign up, it said singing bowl. And I was like, what's that? But I knew what it was, but I just couldn't remember. Right.
Yeah.
So then I get there and I'm like, okay, Ashley, like we're going to have a good time. We're going to meditate. And then the lady gets the little thing and she makes the bowl sing and it like scared me. Like I jumped and I was like, oh. And, you know, they were talking all calm. They're like, okay, we're going to set a scene. And they put us like in the ocean. But then I started like overthinking it. And I was like, oh my God, there's going to be sharks in the water. And then I was sitting there like trying to relax, trying to meditate. But like in my head, I was like sharks were coming for me. And the guy was like, go deeper into the water. And I was like, no, I can't do it.
I can understand with your anxiety how that might have been incredibly stressful.
I tried my best to meditate and I would like to continue to keep trying, but man, I was getting nervous.
Meditation is hard. I mean, and I think too, like, I think a body scan would be really good for you.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's just about bringing awareness to your body. Mm-hmm. I mean, and like singing bowls and like visualization meditations, like those are hard. I mean, just to be able to like continuously paint that picture in your head of like where you are and what you're doing and what the sounds are like. And like, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. I was very overwhelmed and I was getting attacked by sharks. And then afterwards, the lady, she's like, hey, I just want to let you know, I came really close to you at one point with the bowl. Because your solar chakra needs worked on. And I said, oh no, what's that? And then she handed me a card and she told me if I paid $10, she could tell me.
Oh, yeah. Is she like a Reiki practitioner?
Apparently she was. That was not disclosed before the meditation.
Okay. Okay.
But it was fine.
Where'd you go for it?
I don't remember what it was called. It was somewhere out in Stowe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in looking it up. I mean, if you ever want to go to some of that stuff together, like I know a girl that puts on, can't remember where it's at. It's at some like big place in Cleveland. But she does like meditative dance.
Oh.
And like she puts on like this really like calm music and you're basically in a room with a bunch of people who just flow together. It's really beautiful.
Hmm.
It's really cool. And like it helps get rid of that like social anxiety piece because like you're with people who are just doing weird shit. You know what I mean? They're just kind of like flowing and like, I don't know, they're dancing weird, but it's okay because everybody's doing it. Like it's one of those like really good ways to like help social anxiety. For me anyways.
I mean, yeah, sure. I'll try anything to help me battle burnout and all the issues I've got going on.
Yeah, I'll reach out to my girlfriend and see if she knows when the next dance thing is. I think you would really like it. It's fun. I mean, you meditate beforehand and like they play music and they play singing bowls and they come around and they pass around sage and Palo Santos and like they'll do Reiki on your head. It's cool. It's super cool.
No, I'll check it out. I'm always up for an experience.
Ah, me too. Especially spiritual ones.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad that you have like kind of like found something to like direct your passion to. And it seems like you're really happy.
I am. Yeah, I am. I have my moments of stress, but yeah. I mean, we're getting a new guardian hired at work, which is great because our other guardian left very abruptly with little to no documentation and things weren't done. And she screwed us big time.
Great.
So then I got, you know, all of her clients who are all severely and persistently mentally ill. And it's a super large caseload for one person. And like my boss realizes that, like she understands, like it's not good. It's not healthy. She realizes how stressed I am. So, you know, she told me on Friday that she had hired another guardian and I'm really, really, really excited to like kind of having like a full staff place again, you know, and
yeah,
having a community. I love community.
You and your community.
I know. It means so much to me. Communities are beautiful when they're good communities.
When they're good communities.
Yeah.
When not they're positive.
Cult. Yes. Yes. Like cults are not good communities. I mean, no, they're no, no, there is no, I mean, they're not good communities.
Over here defending cults.
I mean, I always used to say, oh, there can be good cults. And my girlfriend's like, Lexi, there is no such thing. I'm like, I guess you're right.
I guess you're right. I think that where your mind goes is they could be used for good, but they're they just never are.
No, they never are. Like, and I guess what makes a cult is like that one leader that everybody worships. But why can't we just like worship the sun? I guess because then it would be a religion. Well, it's a never religion. Yeah, it's not, I guess this is a thanks yep. podcast.
You're trying to find some higher powers there that goes beyond the people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that would just be like more of a hippie commune, you know? Not a cult, but a commune.
And so then just back to the community aspect.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it all loops back around. Yep.
That's funny.
I love that. You sound like you're doing really good too, girl. This is so good for you. I'm really glad that you're doing the podcast. This is really good for you. And it's going to help with like just some of that anxiety that you have.
Yeah.
Like you're doing things that like initially make you uncomfortable, which is exactly how we grow. I mean, mm-hmm. That's really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. I do have like a good time doing it. Even like, there's like almost all of like the beginning episodes are me just kind of like talking to myself, which was hard to like train myself to talk to myself for 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So then like talking to like people that come on is much easier, but then I still have that anxiety, like whether I'm talking to like a person or if I'm talking to myself, I'm still extremely anxious.
Yeah.
When it starts. And then I start to like, it goes away. So I'm always uncomfortable and then I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's because it seems like it has to be like super structured, and like to a degree it does, but I don't think as structured as like we imagine it being.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it's kind of the same as being an RBT. So like I get like a new client or like a new student comes in and then I'm anxious. I don't know them. They don't know me. What's going to happen? Yada, yada, yada. And then eventually I'm fine. But it's fun. I have a fun time. Like this is honestly like a self-care thing for me is being able just to like talk everything through, because like, I don't have a lot of people in my life that know about an ABA or RBTs or anything like that. Like even like my family, like just doesn't understand what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, even talking to myself, it's just very therapeutic for me to just kind of like get it out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, and that's, it comes back to community. You need to have a good support system. You got to have people that you can like call and lean on and talk to. And, you know, when you're not that there's anything wrong with talking to yourself, absolutely always talk to yourself, but like always know that if maybe in that moment you can't rely on yourself, then you have somebody else that you know that you can rely on.
Yeah. No, definitely. So maybe that's what I focus on. I focus on like using this, like trying to build like an RBT, like little community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. Are you going to have Joy on?
That's kind of the plan.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm sure she's like fresh out of it. So I'm sure that she probably is more like, I don't know, like it's more fresh in her brain. You know what I mean? I've been out of it for a while.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess you have been, huh?
Yeah. I mean, for since 2022, I think. Yeah. Yeah, 2022. So, I mean, not super long, but long enough.
Mm-hmm. Long enough. Oh, would you ever go back, do you think? Like, as like later in life, maybe?
No, probably not. I think if anything, I would try to like get a role as a social worker in a school and work with kids in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
trying to find them resources, maybe getting them linked up to ABA. Yeah. But no, probably not. Just because I think like that part of my life is just that chapter's closed. You know what I mean? I already read it for 10 years. It's closed.
Yeah. Done and done. Moved on.
Yeah.
Going away from it. I feel you.
Yeah. I mean, if I could work with kids on the spectrum in a social worker or an advocacy kind of thing, then yes, I would absolutely go back to that.
Yeah. Well, that'd be cool. Maybe we could work at the same school together.
Oh, how cool would that be? Yeah, if they start getting some social workers in schools, I don't know who the hell is going to pay for it, though.
The school that I'm in now has one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nice. And so the school that you're at, is it like all autism based or are there?
No, so it's just like a regular like school and we have an autism, like I'm in like, it's not just autism. It's a multi-inclusional classroom.
Okay. So are there kids with like behavioral problems too? Like not autism related?
Yeah. So those, so I have that in my room.
Okay.
They're in there, my sweet babies.
So then I have a question for you then. How often do you see mental illness in some of the kids that you have?
A lot.
Okay.
A lot more than I think the world wants to acknowledge.
Sure. Yeah.
And then especially trauma. Trauma is a big one that I think needs to have like more studies and more focus on in ABA, like how ABA can like help trauma along with like mental health professionals, because it's heartbreaking to see in the little ones, especially.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, what can I do? How can I help? And then like, I do like a lot of research on trauma and trauma-based approaches and stuff like that, just like independently to try to be better for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's good because trauma, like, comes up in kids so differently. And it's also different. It's a different kind of training to be able to pick up on it and notice it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, it's not really talked about with children in ABA or not. I mean, I just don't think there's a super large emphasis on trauma in kids and like kind of what to look for other than the obvious signs. I mean, we know how to pick up in mental health in adults, but not in kids. And I think you're in a particular kind of like positive situation where like the kids that you work with already don't, I guess, struggle to form like positive responses or like acceptable responses. So you're kind of in a tricky spot where you're battling that piece along with the mental health, which is hard. And there's not a lot of research on like interventions for kids who are autistic and mentally ill there. And that sucks. I mean, because there's a lot of that. I mean, chances are, even if they did not have trauma, their birth could have been traumatic. I mean, the mom could have had trauma that passed down to kids. And I mean, we know based on studies that fetuses do experience trauma.
Yeah.
They don't know it, but sometimes it comes up when they're older and they don't know where it comes from. So actually, if you want to look into that, there's a really good, I don't know if he's like a neuropsychologist or like what exactly his role is, but the guy's name is Gabor Mate.
Okay.
He's like French, I think. Super smart. So he actually does a lot of stuff on trauma. He does a lot of stuff on like, fetuses and the impact of the mother's stress that it has on a baby and how they like express some of that when they get older. It's very interesting. Gabor Mate, you can find him on YouTube. He does so many great talks.
I will definitely look into that. Yeah, no, because that's like exactly right up my alley. And I'm lucky like the BCBA that I have right now is like also very much into looking up all this stuff as well. So I'm actually going to be probably sending that to her as well. Because like she'll like recommend like books and stuff for me to read and does like a lot of trainings like that for like other people. But no, that's awesome. That's amazing.
Have you read The Body Keeps Score?
No, it is in my Amazon. It's in my Amazon wishlist thing.
Yeah, I haven't gotten through it yet, but I mean, so far it is a super helpful book.
I'll read that one. That'll be next during the next payday. I'll just buy it. Let's bite the bullet and buy it.
Yeah, I'm always waiting on that payday, man.
Broke as a joke 24/7. Uh-huh.
Ditto, man. Ditto.
All right. Well, let's see. It has been really fun having you on. I really do appreciate you coming on here.
For sure. And I'd be willing to come on again if you ever want me.
Good. That's good, because I really do appreciate it. And then if you know anybody else who would like to be on it, or even share their story, because I've had people just kind of submit stories to me to read on the podcast too. Anything like that, have them reach out. The email, I'm just going to use this as one of my closing outs, which I forgot to do on the last one, but it's fine. We move on. We grow. We learn. If you are listening and you would like to submit a story or be on the podcast, you can go ahead and email me at behaviortextanon@gmail.com. Or you can send me a message on Instagram or Facebook at behaviortextanonymous. And that would be super cool to have other RBTs on here. Or if you're not an RBT and you were an RBT, or you're thinking about becoming an RBT, doesn't matter to me. All right. So we are going to close out with our ethics. And this time we have ethics 2.3. And that is, RBTs conduct themselves in a professional manner during all work activities. Example, delivering services, receiving training or supervision. They take action to improve their performance following feedback from supervisors. There we go. I feel like a lot of these are, I don't want to say a given, because they're obviously in here for a reason, but yes, RBTs need to be able to take feedback.
Yes.
They've said it multiple times up until this point. I've read them all, and they just make sure you take feedback. You really got to stress that.
Oh, they do, because that's important. I mean, you're literally structuring a child's life. That's just super important.
All right. Well, Lexi, thank you so much. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll link up.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And then if you would like to listen to more of my podcast, we post every 2 Tuesdays. Thank you. Bye.